I'm right here.
Blog Talk Radio.
All right, let's do it.
All right, salam alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam. Brother Kenneth, I don't know where he is.
Walls tumble and fall. Time change, clouds and rain. Through it all, I will stand. Come with me. Through in the past, not today. Cause where there's a will, there's a way. Whoa, I'm gonna hold. Until the finish, I'll be strong. Oceans, strong winds, hills and mountains, sacrifice. Paying the price, share, struggle all your life. Through it all, I will stand. Come with me, yes I will. Throw in the towel, no not today. Cause where there's a will, there's a way. Whoa. I'm gonna hold, hold on, yeah, hold on. I'm gonna hold, hold on, yeah, hold on, hold on. Until the finish, I'll be. And I'm gonna be the first to see the sun. Throw in the towel, not today. I know that where there's a will, there's a way. Oh, I'm gonna hold. I'm gonna hold. I'm gonna hold on. Yes, I am.
The beneficent, the merciful, I bear witness that there is no God but Allah, and I bear witness that Muhammad is his messenger. I further bear witness that the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan is our divine reminder in our midst, And I greet all of you, the listening audience, those of you who have joined us via telephone and in the chat room, as well as my distinguished panelists, in our greeting words of peace. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum salam.
Thank you, thank you. I was beginning to think I was here by myself. What's going on? Okay, tonight we're discussing court battles of the father. Can we keep the court out of our business? And we are still pending attorney Brother Kenneth Kelly Muhammad out of Atlanta. I'm pretty sure he got called into a meeting. He called me today and confirmed that he would be in attendance, and I'm pretty sure he got otherwise occupied or detained, but we will continue to try to reach him. But I do have with us our distinguished panelist and my brother who brought this subject matter to me. And so let me just allow him to present himself once again, since this is not his first time with us. Brother Walter W. Muhammad, come down front and center, soldier. Introduce yourself once again and let the people know who you are.
Yes, ma'am. Assalamu alaikum, family and listeners. I'm Brother Walter Muhammad out of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, by way of Willingboro, New Jersey study group. I'm thankful, Sister Gidget, Nation Building Family, for the opportunity to once again be on the show. I thank you for allowing me to bring a timely, I guess, subject up that affects many of us who have children or have once been married and no longer married, but still continue the, you know, the effort of trying to support our children. And, you know, we just wanted to hopefully talk about some things that, you know, could possibly help us all in some of our experiences that maybe we could share and network and learn some of the processes of things we have to deal with to hopefully keep ourselves out of court. But if we find ourselves in court, maybe some things we could do to try to make our situation a little lighter. So, again, I'm thanking you again for the opportunity, and I'll turn it back over to you.
All right. And thank you, Brother Walter. And I have also with me been blessed again with his presence and his support, and he's always there in my corner. He showed up, and I had just inboxed him and say, I need you, brother, on the line. And he was already on here when I clicked back over to the page. So let me present, and there's no need to introduce this gentleman because he's always with me, my dear, beloved, faithful, loyal brother, Kareem Muhammad from St. Louis. So come on front and center, soldier, and just present yourself because we all know who you are.
In the name of Allah, the beneficent, the merciful, who came in the person of Master Farad Muhammad, let me say to you, Queen Aziza, to the listening audience, to those in the chat room, just everybody throughout the universe, assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam, sir.
Yes,
and thank you so much for joining us, Brother Kareem, at such a last-minute effort. We also was intending to have Brother Mikhail Muhammad with us, but Brother Mikhail is having some problems. He might Skype in. We don't know, but whenever he Skypes in or however we can get in touch with him, of course, we will hear from him as well. And Brother Walter, you brought this subject to my attention some weeks ago, dealing with some things that you personally were dealing with, and it just really sparked my interest. And of course, I had to research some of the data that I wanted to gather. And, you know, I'm always the statistics person. So, you know, we have long heard that 75% of our black households are headed by the mother. But in our marriage statistics, 70% of black couples that get married, the first marriage ends in divorce. That's 70%, 48% of the second marriage. And let me say about the men who are paying child support. Now, I found this interesting, and I tried to do a demographic search. That didn't work, so I kind of went through human resources, health and human resources, to try to get some data. And what I found with those mothers who actually apply for public assistance, whether it be TANF or food stamps or whatever it may be, they say 68% of the fathers are ordered to pay child support. 36% of them actually pay it. Half of them are paying less than what they owe. So half of them are in arrearage. In totality, we have 5.3 million black children who are absent of their father. And 29% of black fathers are incarcerated. Now, wow, come on, y'all. Brother Walter,
yes,
I'm going to let you expound on those statistics while I take a breath.
Yes, ma'am. You were running them off so fast, sister, I didn't get an opportunity to even write them down. But basically, from what I gather of what you were saying, those are some heavy numbers. And unfortunately, when we get into the whole 70% of, you know, our marriages end up in divorce, and 48% of second marriages, that, you know, I can attest from personal experience that I fit in those, both of those branches. And, you know, I have basically been a father who has been in the child support system for at least 13 years now, and still, you know, running, and you know, it's been a pretty intense journey, to say the least. But you know, I think basically when we get into the numbers, we have to also think about the situations. And you know, it's easy to assess a number to something, but when we get into the deep, you know, totality of a situation, a lot of times we start to see so many different variables, and how, you know, you get to talking to people and seeing how sometimes your story is similar to mine and sometimes it's not. And one of the things I wanted to purvey is that, you know, I don't think that there are a lot of fathers who don't want to pay child support. But I think it becomes a situation where, you know, when you are met with being dictated a certain number based on, you know, what the formula and calculations that, you know, your county or state, you know, pretty much governs by, that becomes an issue in a lot of cases. And I think that there, personally, I think there needs to be an overhaul as far as how child support is calculated, as well as administered and so forth and so on, because it seems like the system has a lot of flaws in it. And, you know, people are more than just numbers. But I'm not at any rate trying to say that I don't think that a man should be responsible if he's not the custodial parent to take care of his child. No illusion would I, you know, put that out there, but I just think that there needs to be a greater way of doing this thing. And, you know, that's pretty much what I have with that.
Okay. And Brother Kareem, I'm going to repeat those stats again so maybe Brother Walter can write them down.
Yes,
70% of our first marriage ends in divorce. 48% of our second marriage ends in divorce. 68% of the fathers are ordered to pay child support, but only 36% of them actually pay. And half of them pay less than what is ordered, leaving 5.3 million black children having an absentee father. 29% of black fathers are incarcerated. Give me your take on that. While I'm still cringing.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Well, I mean, the first thing that comes to mind to me is the story, you know, from Scripture and the time that we're in now. The story that it relates to me is the story of, I believe his name was Herod, and he was looking for that Savior, that one that would come and set them down, put them out of business, set, you know, bring in a new world. And Herod decided that he was going to kill the male children, just as it had happened in Moses' time. And the reason I say that is because if we look at the circumstance, then you look at those type of numbers. When you have those type of numbers and they are specific to a particular group of people, and another group of people are in control of the system, it's evident to me that that's a concerted, orchestrated effort. You know, I mean, that's just about, because there's no way you could have that, those kind of numbers, and it not be an orchestrated effort.
Yeah, but let's talk about the origin of it all. Because
right.
when we look at the origin of it all, everybody has a particular situation, because mm-hmm. every relationship and every cause of divorce, of course, is different. However, right. what seems to be happening is that what I read from the source of the Divorce Saloon, which mm-hmm. is a statistics research column, it seems that it says that mothers are over-supported during the court process. And so, you know, I'm just going to ask a question
right.
out there. I'm going to tell you what I think, and then I'm going to ask the question anyway. Because I think a lot of this is being vindictive, because, you know, I'm not saying
yeah.
that, I'm not being oblivious to the fact that some men do leave. I'm not being oblivious to the fact that some men refuse to pay child support or try to avoid it on all costs. But then there are those men who do try to work things out. And for whatever the reason the relationship ended, it seems to me that the bitterness steps in oftentimes. And, you know, the first thing she wants to do is haul him into court. There's never a sit down, a negotiation, and saying, okay, the relationship is over. You know, this is what, you know, I feel is fair as far as child support, and just skipping the court process altogether. Because at some point, you trusted that man in your household or in your bed or in your life. You trusted him enough to reproduce him into the future. And I just don't see it being that difficult to sit down and negotiate terms of financial support for your child. So that's just what I think, you know. And like I say, I'm not being oblivious to some men do abandon their children. Some men abandon their children because they are incarcerated or they die, you know. But I'm just saying, I'm talking about just plain men who are just leaving the relationship, but they're not necessarily leaving their children, but out of bitterness, there's a vindictive spirit that the woman has, and she hauls them into court. Or some people are taught that that is the norm, that this is what you do at the end of a relationship, whether it be a marriage or just a relationship, that you take the person to court to assure financial security for your child. And so, Brother Walter, I'm going to ask you, do you think that in the cases where the fathers are willing to pay child support, do you think that the vindictive spirit of the woman takes over?
That's a good question. And I can honestly say that has a lot at times to play into it. You know, the vindictiveness of I don't like to, you know me, sister, I don't like to generalize too much, but I try to individualize more so. But it's spot on. A lot of times there are some women who, you know, because of whatever the circumstances may be in regards to how, you know, the relationship ended or whatever, you know, and the way that we're cultivated in sometimes society is to, you know, as you said before, you're over, what's the word you use when you said the court is over supported, and a lot of times.
Thank you.
A lot of times, you know, some women who are on that vindictive path know that, and they may go on to, you know, use those systems as weapons of mass destruction, as well as, you know, your child, of course, you know. And it's unfortunate. It's very unfortunate because it does a lot of long-term damage that, you know, most people couldn't even calculate to the children, as well as their, you know, upbringing and understanding how they relate later in life to, you know, situations that they may come across as adults. So, you know, I think, like you said, if there's a situation where a man is able and willing to, or both parties are able and willing to sit down and negotiate, and work you in the negotiation process, you know, this kind of has to be looked at as like a business. This is the business of taking care of your child and making sure your child's well-being financially is taken care of. And when you put your personal pursuits to the side as far as, you know, how you view the individual, things can get done properly. But if we're, you know, bringing a lot of bitterness from situations into it, you know, it can be a rough road. I started off with that with his wife in the early stages of our separation. And, you know, as time progressed, it just went into some real, you know, well, I'm going to take on another dynamic by getting an attorney involved and, you know, we're going to take this to court. And it became over, you know, a real simple disagreement on the terms of something, and then it goes into something else. So, yeah, you know, I think that does play have a large play in it, definitely.
Okay, and Brother Kareem?
Yes, ma'am, absolutely. It does. I mean, to share from my own personal experience, I do have, my youngest son, you know, he's returned to Allah recently, as you know. But
yes,
with both, and then my two eldest children, in both of those cases, when we separated from one another and then eventually divorced, we never went to court as far as child support or anything was concerned. We were able to come to an amicable decision or agreement on how the children were going to be taken care of, because for one, that they know that that's my major concern. Whether we make it or not, the children, I'm responsible for them. We're both responsible, but as their father, I'm responsible for their upkeep, and I'm going to make sure that's taken care of. Now, every man or male may not be like that. But, I mean, exactly what you just said and what Brother Walter was saying about it, like he said, and staying away from generalization, however, you all just made my case for my opening statement. And that's what I'm saying, because when you got it, there's no reason, if there was love there in the beginning, because like you said, it had to be something, then why would a person all of a sudden, regardless of the things that happened, you have a child there, why would a person go into a mindset of that type of, have that type of vitriol, that type of poison in them? That, well, you know what, because it becomes a case of, it's no longer about the child, it's, I'm going to get you. As opposed to the support of the child, I'm going to get you, and the way I'm going to get you is I'm going to dig in your pocket. Well, I mean, how does that help the child? You know, so see, there's got to be something wrong in the thinking. You know, that's where I'm coming from. You know, so, yeah, definitely, there's definitely a problem.
Well, you know, I think that we as women, and I'm going to put myself in that category because I'm a woman, but I didn't have this problem personally. But I just want to say to my sisters who are listening, and let me remind the listening audience, those of you who are joining us in the chat room, if you have a question or comment that you would like us to voice on your behalf, please type in your question or comment, and we will make sure to address it here live. And those of you who are calling in, please press 1 on your dial pad if you have a question or a comment. But let me just say this to the sisters. And, you know, I know I've probably said this 100 times on different shows. You know, I have had the fortunate experience of being raised by my father. And I'm pretty sure people feel the same who have been raised by their mothers. But I could not imagine life without my father. And so, you know, it's just such an injustice to a child to have their father ripped away. I don't care if he's giving you $1,000 a month or he's giving you $1 a month or if he's not giving you anything. Please note that the business of the financial support of your children is between you and the father. It is not between you, the father, and the child. The child has a right, a God-given natural right, to know and to be exposed to their parents. And this goes either way. And there is such an imbalance, and there is such an injustice, and especially for little girls, because the first man that is supposed to validate her as a woman, as a female, is supposed to be her father. That is the purest form of validation that any girl will ever get, and that is the pure, unconditional love of her father. So if you extract him out of the equation and the first man she encounters is a man who desires her sexually, he's going to validate her in a way that is not necessarily beneficial to her, her character, or her growth and development as a woman. So you have to look down the road as well as for your son. The first man that's going to come along and teach him how to be a man might not be the man that he needs to be taught by. And please note that we are excluding, you know, those fathers who are abusive, those fathers who have abusive habits that might not be conducive for the child. Because if your husband is a ex-husband or a baby daddy, whatever you want to call him, if he's an alcoholic, a dope fiend, a child molester, a wife beater, whatever, then you might want to just let him be where he at. But in all essence, if you're just angry with him because of the relationship, you don't have the patent or the right to deny your child that relationship. It creates an imbalance that will follow them all the days of their lives. And I can bear witness to that for being a child who had an absentee mother. So, you know, let's just focus on our children. Let's do what's best for our children. Let's keep them at the forefront of our thought. And we're going to move on because I want to share some more statistics. Now, this is what the court, the divorce saloon meant when they said that the court was over-supportive of mothers. They said that 7% of fathers, now I mean, it's a very low number, and like I say, these are just statistics. We don't know how valid they are. 7% of fathers actually have custody or are raising their children. But within that 7%, only 10% of the population of the children receive child support from the mother. Now, I got a problem with that. I got a problem with that because if he getting up and he combing hair and he fixing breakfast and he dressing children and he taking them to school and he going to the plays and he going to the emergency room and, you know, doing all the things that mothers do when they're single and, you know, there's no father around. No father around. Well, why can't the mothers be ordered to pay child support at the same rate and pursued in the same manner as fathers are? And I'm going to ask your take on that, Brother Kareem. What's up with that, especially in our black households? What's really going on with that issue?
Well, from the way I can see it, is, again, that if you have such a disparaging situation there because, again, it lends to, you know, like I say, and I just can't get away from the fact that everything I see that, and like I said, don't get me wrong, let me explain this. We all have personal responsibility for what we do for our actions, regardless of anyone else. Let me say that. I mean, that's all of us, regardless of what's going on, regardless of circumstances, we all have personal responsibility for our actions. However, anytime you have a system that is going to have that type of situation, then it seems to me that they want to make it that much more difficult, particularly for a black father, to be able to provide a decent home in that situation. I mean, no single home, and I'm going to say it in this language, in my opinion, I'm going to say it like that, no single parent home is normal. However, when you have a situation like that, it should be across the board equal. If the man has the children and has custody of the children and is, like you say, performing those same duties, then he should be afforded the same economic favors, if you will. But I think it's denied the man, the black man in particular, so that it makes it hard for him to provide that type of, whatever type of balance he can. You know, and I mean, like I said, and again, I'm going to say that's just my opinion.
Yes, sir. And Brother Walter?
Yes, ma'am. I definitely agree with Brother Kareem, you know, in that regard, as far as when you put those statistics out about the 7% of, you know, the population as far as, you know, being single-parent fathers and then the 10% of women paying. But just to add another dynamic of how I see that, I believe that in a situation, and not to try to make it like a male-female thing, but I think in that case, I think most men are willing to not really go to the court system in that regard and have those particular affairs put out there. I think a man who's really a man about that in that type of situation would try to either, if the mother was the type of mother that was able to provide for the child and not in a situation where maybe she was disabled, you know, whether it be mentally or physically or some type of abandonment issue, I think a man who's dealing with another capable mother who's just, like, maybe not be, you know, the custodial parent would rather either take on the weight or responsibility for the majority of that before running to the court and saying, you know, I want to take her for child support. Because most men, if they're really men about that situation, this is my personal opinion, I don't know this to be a fact, but I think that you would rather sit and try to work it out and see what can we come up with on our own before we become vindictive and go down to the court system and do all of that. I know being, if I was a man in that position, that's what I would rather do because, you know, I see it as a total waste of time trying to go down there and to convince a person or people really don't have no interest in of my affairs and how I am as a person. I'm just basically a docket number to them. And, you know, to put all of my personal business and your personal business out there, I think that most men, unless they're on something vindictive, like some of our sisters are or females are, they would rather bypass that whole process. Now, personally, I, you know, if I was in that situation, I would definitely, and I agree with you when you say, you know, when it comes to child support, you know, you should really keep the children out of that. You know, but I think a lot of times in the emotional aspect of what we're dealing with when we are getting the lack thereof of funds and things of that nature, sometimes with frustration, it comes into a tug-of-war situation. So if the mother is, you know, let's just say the mother is asking the father for child support, and, you know, the father may have, you know, that situation and maybe one or two previous or after situations, and the child is saying, well, Dad, can you buy me this Nintendo game system? You know, a lot of times the first response to a child is, well, you know, I don't have the money. You know, why don't you see if your mom can, you know, do it? I'm paying child support. You know, and that's not always the best response, but a lot of times that's common, you know, or, you know, it could go the other way, you know, whereas if the father's maybe not paying enough, the mother might say, well, no, why don't you ask your father? He don't pay no child support, or he don't do nothing for you. So, I mean, it takes a mature mind to deal with things when, you know, those type of situations come up, but, you know, this is definitely a topic, sister. It's bringing back some real memories now. But all praise is due to Allah.
Yes, sir. Okay, so let me ask you this, Brother Walter. You had recently, if I'm not mistaken, you recently went to court on an issue. Am I correct?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
Would you want to share that experience with us, and why were you even in court, and what was going on with that?
Yes, sure. I would love to. I recently went back to court as of last week, last Friday, and it was a total waste of time, and that's a whole nother situation within itself, just the lack of communication in the court that goes within the court system to, you know, those who seek justice in certain matters. But long story short, I had a child who was 21 years of age, and I was still, you know, currently paying child support for. And, you know, the agreement or the arrangement by the court was that I was to pay child support as long as my adult son was still a full-time student in college in the state where he resides at. And basically, you know, the other two, his other two siblings, I had them emancipated from the order, from the child support order as of last year in July, but he was the remaining one based on that stipulation. Well, it came to that the court also stipulated that he was to provide me with proof of his full-time college, you know, classes and things of that nature, but I wasn't given that proof, you know, by him or his mother. And at some point after months of trying to, you know, chase him down and chase them down to get that information, you know, I wound up having an opportunity to sit my son down and talk to him, you know, and I felt as though him being an adult child at the age of 20 at that time, just before his 21st birthday, I wanted to, you know, make it clear to him that I was holding him responsible for providing me with the information that was to benefit him in his pursuits, even though his mother was the actual person that was on the docket number who originally set up the child support. But I felt as though at his age, he was responsible because this pertained to him, and that, you know, this was something that he could work out with me. And, you know, I had no problem paying the child support and being supportive, but I needed, from what the court had stipulated, that to happen, because there's situations where people continue to pay child support, however, you know, based on similar stipulations, but the child winds up not in school. And, you know, the money is just free money at that point. So, you know, me having, like, I guess I call it my child support spider sense, because I wasn't getting the information that I had requested, you know, in a reasonable amount of time, you know, I started inquiring, and, you know, he assured me, yeah, Dad, I'm going to, you know, give you the information. I'm like, you know, I'm going to send it to you. Finally, you know, he just disappeared. You know, I couldn't get in touch with him. So, you know, it was a situation where his other sibling, his younger sibling, had got hit by a car, unfortunately, and, you know, his mother called me to communicate what was going on, and, you know, we got to talking about that, and then, you know, once we assured that that situation was, you know, good, you know, I asked her, well, what's going on with our son, you know, our other son? I haven't heard from him. I don't know what's going on with him in the school. You know, I'm not getting the information that, you know, I asked you to provide for me. And basically, you know, she went into a kind of song and dance. Well, I don't know, and you got to talk to him. And, you know, at that point, I kind of figured out what was going on. So, you know, I did make contact with him, but I let him know, you know, in a very stern way, like, listen, you know, we had this talk, and I thought that, you know, you and I had an understanding, but, you know, it's obvious that, you know, you're not in school. He admitted he wasn't in school. Now, this is 6 months of child support going on, you know, without him being in school, and I'm a little agitated now because, you know, it's free money, and you're 21, you're working, you're living at home. I'm like, you partying, you doing this, so I'm like, where is my money going? And this isn't like some, you know, insignificant amount of money. It's, you know, it's a fairly decent, you know, piece of, as we say, cheddar. So, you know, I'm like, okay, well, basically, you know, I'm going to let the court sort this out. And, you know, I moved at that point to go back to court and file a motion for emancipation of himself. And, you know, at that point, he agreed that he thought, you know, it would be best for him to be emancipated, being as though he wasn't fulfilling his end of the bargain. But, you know, more than just the money, it was I felt like the deception and the lack of being straightforward with me about the situation. And, you know, his mother, you know, pretty much playing into, you know, the same situation. And to this day, I don't know who got the money and who did what, but, you know, that was the situation. So we went back to court. Well, I went back to court. They filed that they didn't want to have an oral hearing about it, and they actually filed or agreed for the emancipation. So I go to court last Friday, and I show up, and, you know, I sit there for hours, and just to find out that I'm not going to be heard that day because the judge already made a determination and they're going to send me, you know, the judgment in the mail. So, you know, that's the lack of communication from the court back to me, you know, and it's just sometimes it could be a real frustrating process. So that was my situation. I apologize for being lengthy, but I just wanted to, you know, give it an even keel so, you know, maybe we have an understanding.
Right. And you know, oftentimes, you know, and that was another statistic that was, you know, shocking to me, that in 2011, I think it said it was 3.8 million fathers were paying child support for children that were not theirs. And I know I shouldn't laugh, but really? I mean, really? I'm sorry. I shouldn't laugh, but I mean, how scandalous! How scandalous can you be? I mean, you know, and in that situation, Brother Walter, with your son being an adult. Now, let me ask you, because I don't know, was the mother actually receiving the money, or was it your son?
His mother was actually receiving the money because she was the one on the docket number. Now, whether the funds were being dispersed to him, that's a whole nother question that to this day, you know, it's as much as a mystery as, you know, I don't know, whatever mystery you want to come up with. But I just know that the money was taken from, you know, me and dispersed, and, you know, I'm sort of upset. I'm very upset about that. And pretty much I think I'm going to try to see whatever legal, you know, avenues I could pursue to possibly be compensated for some of that money, if not, you know, as much as I can get, because I don't think that's a fair situation for me.
Yes, sir. Okay, and we have Brother Mikhail, who originally was supposed to join us live on the panel, but he is in the chat room. And Brother Mikhail, he loves the way I say his name, Mikhail. He has a question, and I guess maybe you and Brother Kareem, I'm going to ask Brother Kareem first, can answer his question. His question is, how do you keep the children out of the child support process if the premise of the ex-spouse is to use the child support system as retaliation for a failed relationship if both parties are believers? Okay, Brother Kareem,
yeah.
I'm gonna let you take a shot at that one. I know your gun is already loaded.
Yes, it is.
I'm gonna let you go for that one, and then I'm gonna let Brother Walter answer.
Yes, ma'am. Well, the first thing that we have to remember is, I'm glad he said, as if both parties are believers. If we're truly believers, then we understand. You know, and we accept the fact that the biggest factor is love. And when I say love, I'm not talking about that gushy emotional stuff. I'm talking about that principle. We're talking about the principle of love, where we love ourselves individually and we love our people. And understanding that, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad made a statement in Message to the Black Man, if I'm not mistaken, where he talked about birth control plan to destroy us, and he applied it specifically to the birth control plan of them destroying our race, quote unquote. However, it still applies in this situation too. He said it would be better off doing what our brothers and sisters in Africa and other countries do, handling those affairs ourselves. So if we're believers in the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, then the first thing we understand is that our children or our future. So we don't want to poison them with any poison that we suffer from. If we're really practicing and following the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, number one, divorce is the last thing on the tape. And if it comes down to that point, we understand that those children do not need to be a part of that. And the way we keep them out of that is, as much as we can, is explaining to them in an intelligent manner why the mother and the father got to separate, why this family unit now has to not be a family unit anymore. You know, and I mean, if it comes down to that, where it has to be, that's what we have to do. We have to explain it to them, and explain it to them in the context of the teachings, explain it to them in the context of Quran. Now, but like I will reiterate, though, however, if we're really believers, then we will fight like hell to make it work. But if it comes down to it, we will fight like hell to make it work. In other words, what is the problem that we can't be together anymore? In other words, the man, the FOI, I'm going to say it, we believers, the FOI need to find out himself what the hell is wrong with him. And the MGT need to find out in herself what the hell, and I'm saying it that way for a reason, because it definitely has to be hell in us that is driving us apart. So that needs to come out. But like I said, if it gets to a point where we, as we're taught in Quran, we're taught in the teachings, if we cannot live together in peace, it's made very plain, then we must part in peace. And parting in peace means that we have to be equitable, we have to be equal and just to one another. It's going to be hard on the children. However, the children need to understand what's going on, and then the two parties involved must do everything in their power to make that transition as easy, even though it's not easy, but as easy on the children as possible, and then
the mother, I'm going to use the mother first, the mother must make sure that the father is a part of those children's life in a proper manner, even though the two, the mother and the father, are not going to be together. And by the same token, the father must make sure that he doesn't poison the children with any vitriol, any poison about the mother. We, in other words, the answer to that question to me is we must be Muslims. We got to be Muslims. That's it. You know, all this so-called modern stuff, William Wendy, and Oprah Cornbread, I mean Oprah, all that things just stick to the side. We can't listen to them. We have to go directly to what we have as our base and our root and our foundation, and that's the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and it must be applied, practical application.
Okay. And Brother Walter, do you have an answer for Brother Mikhail?
I mean, yes, ma'am. I mean, pretty much Brother Kareem summed it up so beautifully. His statement of we have to be believers, you know, and that means going into what we've been given by the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad under the teachings of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan and extracting those key principles of, you know, self, you know, the basis of community development. Excuse me, I'm sitting up there getting choked up. But, you know, we have to apply everything we've been given at that point and then dig deep and ask Allah to purify the heart, because sometimes it's so hard, I mean, so easy to become corrupt in a lot of situations and how we view things. You know, as how we've been shaped by the world and the view of the world, as Brother so eloquently put, you know, the Oprahs and the Wendy Williams and, you know, the foolishness that we get caught up in. And then we have friends and family who get in our ears and things of that nature. And, you know, they're coming with their slanted and twisted views of how they've been dealt with situations. So it really takes a special person as a believer to dig deep and go hard, and don't be afraid to ask for the support of the mosque, you know, and the study group that you are a part of, you know, to help to sometime govern over these affairs and witness these affairs. Because if we're believers, we know, as the Quran teaches us, that we need witnesses.
That's right.
And a lot of times, you know, my vantage point of it, and how I see it, and your vantage point of it, how you see it, but what does the Quran say? How does the Quran guide us in our affairs in those situations? You know, of course, again, we talk about going down to the court. Again, you're nothing, whether you're a Muhammad or a Ali or an X or, you know, a Jones or a Smith to them, you're just a docket number. But when you, you know, come and sit down as a believer in the Nation of Islam, we should be practicing principles that we've been given. So we do our best to try to be civil and to be just and equitable in our dealings and our affairs. And that's the best thing you can do. And, you know, my motto has been and always will be, as long as we make it about the children and not about our perception of what we think the children need and should have and this and that, then we, the children and everybody in the situation, will come out, you know, victorious. But when we make it about our personal feelings and affairs and what people are feeding us and these type of things, then we're always going to come up short. You know, and Brother, you know, hit it spot on. You know, if we're believers, then we got to be believers. But if we, as Brother Mikhail said, likes to say, if we nigglums, then we're going to be nigglums. So we got to make a clear distinction as what we're going to be, you know, and that's all we can do, and ask Allah to cover down on our affairs and give us a purity of heart when we're dealing. That's right.
Yes, sir. And you know, and let me add this as well. You know, let's also think about rising above emotion. You know, first of all, it is so wrong on either side, whether it's the father or the mother, to include your child in your relationship. So many times, you know, the mind of the child is poisoned by what the parent says. So even if you're in the house, even if you're married and you have disagreements, you know, you have to rise above emotion even when you're dealing with one another, because you don't want the child to form an opinion based on your relationship. You can poison a child's view or perception of a parent by how you talk to them and how you address them, and if you call them names or whatever may happen, you know, especially if you're abusive, you can ruin a child's perception of you. And certainly when it comes to child support, you have to deal with that like a business. That's just like when your parents die or your friend die or your sister die, whatever. Eventually you got to get up and you got to go to work and you got to handle your business, because life goes on. You got to pay bills. Well, it's the same thing with child support. When the relationship ends, you still have to move on and take care of the business aspect and say, okay, you know, yes, I have a loss of income. Yes, I'm going to need help caring for my child. I need to sit down with him and work this out and remove the essence of the entire relationship out of the equation, because it's over. And I don't care how much child support you are awarded. If you are awarded $1 million a minute, the relationship that you're so bitter about is still over. And nothing is going to fill that void but time. And nothing is going to get you over that anger but time. Money cannot buy you a peace of mind. And so it's not even a vindictive reward even, because a lot of times you are still, you know, bitter even when you get the check. So that's not making any difference, and it's not making any sense when you look at the amount of damage that you're going to do to this child. You won't even have enough to put the child through therapy. You know, so, I mean, you know, we have to be realistic on how we deal with these things. And I also hate that Brother Mikhail is not here to share his story, but I'm going to ask, and Brother Attorney Kenneth, I don't think he's going to be able to make it, but I want to ask the question is, why is it that we allow the courts to determine our structure in our family lives? And I'm going to ask Brother Kareem that question, you know, because it seems like to me, Brother Kareem, we can communicate very well when we're courting. You know, we can communicate all too well when we're making a baby. So why is it that when it's time for us to resolve the relationship or dissolve the relationship, why is it so difficult? What is it about us? And I'm not talking about us as Muslims, because I know that's the specific question that Brother Michael asked. I'm talking about us as black people. We have so conformed to this systematic way of dealing with each other, this Western society of dealing with one another. And, you know, when in the village where my grandfather comes from, right outside of Nairobi, if there is such a thing, very rare, such thing as a divorce, you know who decides who gets the child? The elders.
That's right.
The elders decide. And the elders decide based on their observation of you. And so we don't utilize our elders anymore. You know, we don't utilize the wisdom that is right around us. We put our elders away as if they have no significance, no importance in our lives anymore. But I'm going to ask you, Brother Kareem, in your opinion, What has started that mindset with us as black people going to the courts?
Well, again, the way that I see that, and see, I'm glad you preambled that question the way you did. The bottom line is it goes back to the very fact that we have been robbed. We are blind, deaf, and dumb, and have been robbed of the knowledge of self. You hit the nail on the head, and as I like to say, drove it straight through the board when you talked about the fact that we do not utilize, we do not use our elders, because that is really how such things were decided among us and are decided among our societies that have not been poisoned and influenced by Western society or with the Western or the Caucasian mind, is that you observe an individual, and based upon that individual's actions, it'll tell you exactly who you're dealing with. And so the reason that we are in such state that we automatically, I'm going to just say it, we run into massa, okay, because we still have a slave mind. And dare I say, and like you said, you're not just talking about as believers or as Muslims, but even in the ranks, you see in the behavior of an individual, that's the first thing we want to do. I'm not saying that there aren't some cases, that there aren't some times that we need to involve the system of jurisprudence in this country. I'm not saying that there aren't times that we need to do that. However, for the most part, since we have supreme wisdom, I'm talking about us now as believers, then we should be able to adjudicate these situations ourselves. However, the majority of us yet have a slave mentality. In other words, it goes back to that vindictiveness. Okay, well, I know what, I got this attitude towards you. I may not be able to do nothing to you, but I bet you you're scared of the white man. He'll get you. You know, and that's that twisted thinking as opposed to sitting down as two human beings and settling our differences, working out our problems. Okay, like you said, we can communicate real well. I'm going to skip over the courtship part because I haven't seen too many people court in a long time. We do a lot of dating. But courting, actually bringing our case to the table and learning about who the individual is that we're going to be dealing with, and we can definitely communicate on that level when it comes to the physical act of producing this other human being. But we never really get to know ourselves and know who we're dealing with. So when the time comes for this relationship, as it is, to be dissolved, now we're hurt. Like you said, we need to learn how to rise above emotion. But we're hurt. So we're not operating out of a sense of thinking about the children and this new life we produce. We're operating out of a sense of, I want vengeance against you. I want to get you because you hurt me. You no longer make me happy. So now I want to hurt you. So the only way I can, and here's, And this child no longer is a child. This child is now a weapon. Whether it be the male or the female, this child is now a weapon. So I'm going to use this weapon now to get at you because you disappointed me. No, hell, you disappointed yourself by not going into the relationship in a proper manner. You produced a new life without thinking about exactly what you were doing, you know. And that's why I make a distinction between courting and dating. And I haven't said this on the air, but I've said this before to many different individuals when they ask me. As the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan kind of said in a lecture, when you court, it's like going to court. You both bring to the table what you have. You make your case as to why the two of you should be together. The majority of individuals are running around, and they date. Like I've heard individuals talk about Muslim dating. How are you going to have some Muslim dating? A date is when you sit down and set up a time and a date for a booty call. People are getting married so that they can have legal fornication. They're not going into it and they cheer. And that's and like I say, and I'm gonna get off of that. But the thing is like I say, we're still suffering from mental slavery. That's why as soon as things go wrong, the first thing we do is run to NASA to settle our differences, as opposed to asking God to settle our differences.
Okay. All right. And Brother Walter, do you want to expound on that?
Sister, it's pretty much everything Brother Kareem said. It's hard to go after Brother Kareem because he covers the full spectrum of most of the topics. So all praise to do a lot. It's pretty much with Brother Sal. I'm in agreement with that. A lot of times we don't take the time to, I just add that we don't take the time to first know us, know ourselves before trying to get to know others. And as Brother said, we're not courting properly in a lot of cases and scenarios. We are taking that mindset of dating someone and then going into, finding out the evidence and the facts later on to find out that we really wasn't compatible for one another from the door. And then, unfortunately, now we have started to produce families. And, with breakups come, situations that, ultimately, take another turn. But the court thing, it can be used as a weapon in a lot of cases. And like Brother said, I'm not against adjudication as far as certain matters, but I think when we can really sit down and be civil and understand and come to an agreement, it's like if I'm a good neighbor and I accidentally broke your window by making a repair at my house, I broke the window, you shouldn't have to sue me to tell me I need to fix your window. We should just come to an agreement. I broke your window. My bad. What do I need to do to fix this? Now, of course, we may disagree in price because you might want to replace a whole nother window. Like, your window might have been a 1965 version, but now you want the 2013 model. Now, it might say, So, of course, we may vary on that. But as far as just admitting, we need to do what we need to do, it's no denial in that. And it's unfortunate that a lot of times we do have to run to these people, and try to get justice in very simple situations that if we just sit down with, they have people who you can mediate with and sit down and draw up a contract and say, look, this is what I propose to do, and if anything should change, hopefully you'll be flexible enough to come and sit back down to the table with me that we could change the terms again if, there was a serious life event or something. You know what I'm saying? And if we can't get justice based on this contract that we drew up, then, maybe we do need to go down to the courts and have this contract looked at and let them, adjudicate over the situation. But, it's a lot of times it's real pettiness, real bitterness that exists, and just a hatred for self, and kind. And when we, stop following the ways of Western civilization or so-called civilization, and like you brought a very good point about having the elders sit down, but in a lot of cases now the elders become somebody that's just 10 or 15 years older than you. And sometimes they're in the same situations that you in. Bernie Mac said, great-grandma, 35, mama, 16. You see what I'm saying? So a lot of times the elders that ran out.
Great-grandma,
48.
Yeah.
So a lot of times we don't even have the elders no more. And, the wisdom that they've had, this world is exhausted. So, unless you're being guided by the time and what must be done, then, a lot of times that wisdom is exhausted. So, that's pretty much it.
Okay. Well, listen, I don't know how true this is. I just ran across this. If somebody is listening who's on Facebook, somebody please give me a confirmation. Did any of you hear about the death of Malcolm X's grandson? Has that been confirmed?
The last thing I saw was that he was alive and well, and the comment he made was that they drew guns on him and his mother. But not that he's not dead, but he is alive and well. Him and his mother are well, and that they drew guns on him. I don't have the complete story because I haven't had time to check deep into it, but that was the last thing I heard.
Okay, and when was that?
That was about 15 minutes ago.
Oh, okay. Well, praise be to Allah. we hope that that is not the case. And like I say, if anybody has any confirmation, please hit me on Facebook, hit me on Twitter at ZZEI65. We definitely want to follow that story. That would be such a shame, because I think he is the first male heir of Brother Minister Malcolm. So we pray that's not the case. Okay, let's move on with our topic. So let me ask you, Brother, and Brother Mikhail, if you're still there, I would like for you, if you could, via chat room, weigh in on this question. Brother Walter, when there is, and I just want your opinion as well as yours, Brother Kareem, when there is domestic violence, because, you know, domestic violence can go either way. You know, the woman can be the aggressor, the man can be the aggressor. Either way, domestic violence is totally uncool and definitely uncalled for, and there is none valid excuse for domestic violence, period. I'm going to say that one more again. There is no valid excuse for domestic violence. However, the first law of nature is self-preservation, so please, you know. Excuse me. I must have been getting ready to say something wrong. I started choking, but by all means, you know, if you got to save your life, save your life. But we hope it never comes to that. But how often have you heard, and like I said, these were questions I wanted to ask for the attorney, but how often have you heard that fathers in particularly have been denied visitation rights, even though they pay child support, and even though it may have been one occasion, now let's just say even two occasions of reported domestic violence, that the father is denied visitation, you know, due to domestic violence. Is that the norm? Have you heard? Or do you know, Brother Walter?
Yes, ma'am. I've heard of situations like that. You know, and like you said, it's absolutely unfortunate, because any time that, you know, you have that circumstance and you have children involved as well as anybody involved, you know, it always becomes, you know, a bad situation. And, you know, I my personal thing on it is that, you know, even if a man has done that, and maybe there's some type of, you know, situation where he's moved on and maybe gotten some help from, you know, that situation, you know, he still should, you know, have an opportunity to see his child, but maybe it should be done in a more supervised way, where, you know, maybe you start off with a supervised type of situation, and if it, you know, proves after a certain time, maybe as, gradually, you know, time can, you know, dictate, time and circumstance can dictate whether it goes further than supervision into just more private, you know, time and so forth and so on. But, you know, for chronic situations of abuse and just, you know, someone, I just think that's just a bad situation altogether. Maybe, you know, you just have to, like, kind of chuck that one off and say, well, look, you know, my dad is not, or my mother is not healthy enough mentally to have me around, you know, that I don't become victim to that abuse, you know, so we just might have to chuck that one up. But for someone who's, you know, went through the processes of getting help and, you know, hopefully trying to overcome and understand what produced that in them, I think they should be given an opportunity, you know, to definitely try to be a part of the child's life, you know, but that's, you know, that's on a willingness basis of really trying to overcome that.
Okay. And Brother Kareem.
Yes, ma'am. Well, I mean, I will have to say wholeheartedly, I agree with Brother Walter in that vein. I agree with you also, as we have talked, there is absolutely no reason for either party to put their hands on the other. That's just out of the question. My mother, raised me. You know, my mother's MGT, and my mother don't play about her children. However, she raised me with the thought in mind that if you ever even think that you, if you're with a woman and you ever even think you want to put your hands on her, it's time to go. It's time to let that situation go, because there's something wrong for you to think that you want to put your hands on this woman, you know. And I would share the same advice, you know, with a sister, that if you think you want to put your hands on this man, then y'all need to just, you know, and it goes back to knowing who you're dealing with up front. However, when a situation like that has come about, then, like I said, I agree with Brother Walter. If it was a situation where it happened, now you're apart, okay, and it was a situation where it was between the husband and the wife, okay, since we're talking about from that level, then and the man has moved on, the woman has moved on, I do not think that a father or a mother should be denied the right to see their child. Now, if it was a situation particularly, for example, involving abuse of the children, then yes, after correction of that in the individual who was the abuser, and after supervised visits, quote unquote, with the child, with the children, once it's established that this is not something that's going to take place, then yes, you know. But like I said, I agree with the brother. I mean, there's nothing really more I can add to that. I mean, that makes perfect sense to me.
Right. Okay. All right. And so let me ask you something else about domestic violence, because, you know, oftentimes children witness domestic violence, and I'm just trying to figure out, in that situation, you know. And you are the men. Would you trust, if it were your grandson or whatever, would you trust the father to be alone with the child, even though he may not have exacted, you know, physical harm to the child, but just the fact that there was some domestic violence? Would you be cautious about that?
Well, I would, absolutely. I would. I mean, again, it goes back to, like I said, that's a situation that has to be watched. And like you said, as a grandparent, oh, most definitely. I mean, this has got to be watched. As a matter of fact, I would be the one to say, okay, well, yeah, I would have to supervise. I'm going to just be real about it. You know, I mean, because again, going back to looking out for understanding the rights of the parent, that's fine. However, in my estimation, the not only rights, but the very, excuse me, not only the rights, but the very heritage, if you will, the very legacy that belongs to the child is that they be protected at all costs. Because, for one, them individually, you don't want that happening to them. You don't want them hurt. The other thing is you do not want this to become something that's perpetual, and it's constantly passed on and keeps happening.
Right.
Pardon me.
Okay. Because, and the reason why I asked that question, because sometimes what I have bore witness to in certain situations is that sometimes there's just a volatile relationship between the man and the woman. But the man is an excellent father. The woman is an excellent mother, you know. And due to domestic violence between the two of them, the marriage or the relationship may end. But it seems that when we go to court, you know, it becomes more about us. You know, I've sat in on a case where this was not a married couple. They had a domestic living situation, and there was a volatile relationship. I mean, they just could not keep their hands off of one another. But they were both excellent parents. From what the child, who was 9 years of age at that time, the child was not even aware of domestic violence. the child said, well, I know Daddy get hurt at work a lot. And he said of his mother, well, my mom, she falls a lot. So evidently there was an explaining away of bruises and scars or whatever. So the child never bore witness to, you know, this kind of domestic violence, but the child spoke very highly of the parents as far as, you know, what, you know, the things he was given, privileges that he had, how he was treated, you know, or things like that. He even spoke on how he was punished. Sometimes I'm yelled at, yeah, I get a whooping, you know, every now and then when I do this stuff. And so I don't think he was coached in any way. But at the end of the day, what happened is that even though the mother and the child was still there, I had to beckon the district attorney to please have the child removed. Now, see, this is what I'm getting at. This is what I'm leading up to, because we're going to talk about these courts. I had to beckon the district attorney to tell the social worker to please remove the child, because now we're talking about a child support case, but now there's a line of questioning about domestic violence. And so the child who never bore witness to this was forced to sit in court and hear maybe about 5 minutes of it before I got the social worker's attention. Okay, y'all act like y'all going to ignore me. Not today. You know, you finna pull this child up out of here. But he got to hear about 5 minutes of, you know, of how, you know, he stays out late, and yeah, when he come home, yeah, I'm mad. Yeah, I might bust him in his face. The child never knew that. So there, again, there's a situation being created in so-called court of law that is not conducive for our children. And that's why I so disagree with the child support process in court, because the court is not designed, especially for us as black people, to go in and get a fair trial, even if it's non-criminal. They're going to distort our character in front of our very children. And if there's not an advocate, and even though I wasn't an advocate on this case, if there's not an advocate for that child who gives a care, the child will be exposed to all kinds of things and histories in the relationship that is not even relevant to the case. Things that happened before he or she were born. They get to sit and listen and hear, you know, what has happened in the relationship. So now this child leaves the courtroom feeling broken because he's learning new things about his parents that he never knew. And so all of this, along with, and Brother Walter, you can bear witness to this, in some states, you know, they have it where parents, fathers in particularly, you can get incarcerated if you don't pay your child support. You can have your driver's license restricted if you don't pay child support. So you get a suspended license. So if you live in a city where it's necessary for you to have a vehicle to drive, then you're subject to be pulled over for having a suspended license, and you're subject to be taken to jail. Come on, don't this sound like a puzzle being put together? Is it just me?
Oh, yeah, sister, you are 100% on it. And one of the things that I think a lot of people misunderstand about the whole child support system is it's really not a child support system. You are in a probationary system. You are actually a criminal. It gives it a pretty face by saying child support, but the real deal is you are actually a prisoner of that system, and as long as you comply to the rules of your probation, which is to pay your support or your fine, is it's been deemed, unfortunately, we don't think of it as a fine because it's, oh, well, it's benefiting your children. But anytime you have the right to suspend my license, my registration, come lock me up, that's a probation.
That's not something of free will or something like I just signed a contract for a 2-year agreement on my cellular bill. But this is real. So a lot of times when we're running down there to do this, we have to really look at what's being done. And, you know, it's unfortunate because sometimes people fall into situations that are not purposeful, where you may have a downsizing your economy and your job and things of that nature, and you find yourself in a situation where you fall behind, as you mentioned earlier in the show, about arrears and things of that nature. And then, you know, you have to go through such a process to try to get the court to hear you, to listen to it. And then you're dealing with cold-hearted judges a lot of times who have no care about your situation and what's going on with you. So it's a lot to deal with. And, you know, one of the things that I wanted to ask a question to, not to take us off topic of what you were asking, but I struggle with a situation personally with me being in a blended family. And my wife currently has a daughter who, from an individual who doesn't pay any type of support, whether it's in the through the court process or an agreed amount. He pays absolutely nothing. However, he's an individual who's ran down to the court and required visitation, you know, from my wife, you know, on a regular visitation schedule, but yet is inconsistent with the schedule at that. But my wife is subject to possibly be taken to court and fined or, you know, held in contempt for not meeting the individual. But my question is, I struggle as a man who has been in the system for over 13 years and is paying and is willing to pay. Not that I've been made to pay, but, you know, I just found myself in the system based on, you know, the situation with my ex-wife who, you know, found herself to want to take me there. But here's a man who pays, but here's a man who doesn't pay and gets all the breaks. You see what I'm saying? But yet wants to have all of the perks of being a so-called father, but I always make a reference or joke to say, you know, the child is not like a fish in a gold tank. You know, she's a living, breathing entity that requires upkeep and maintenance, but yet you're willing to, you know, you're not willing to provide any of that, but you want all the full benefits of a parent. So what do you think in regards to that? Like, how do you handle a situation like that?
Well, I'm going to let Brother Kareem answer that.
Well,
and then I'm
going
to come behind you.
All right. Well, I mean, I will say this. First of all, I feel your pain. I can say that.
Yes, sir.
You know, however, handling a situation like that, I would think that you handle it in the most intelligent manner that you can. I mean, if he's gone to the court and the court has ordered this, and we know, as you said, it's not really a support system. It's more you actually are on probation, and that's one of the things you have to understand. It goes back to what the Honorable Elijah Muhammad told us about. He told us there were three things that we definitely had to have to be successful. One, he said that we had to master mathematics. Okay. Two, he said that we definitely had to have a concise knowledge of history. But above that, you know, and beyond that, since we're dealing on this level, we have to have a command of the English language. Because when you enter into court, okay, it's the language that they use. And anything that they say to us, the bottom line is that the court, and we've heard the talk about the fiat money, well, the court itself is actually illegal. But the reason that they have jurisdiction and power over us is because the majority of us do not understand the language. When they ask us certain questions and we go in there, based upon our responses, pretty much what we're doing is we're entering into a legal contract with them. And if we understood the language and what we're dealing with when it comes to the court, I'm talking about at this point, then we would be better able to navigate these rapids, because that's what they are.
Now, as far as the individual is concerned, that would be a conversation I would have with you in private, bro.
Well,
yes,
you know, Brother Walter, to answer your question, the court process in itself is such a tiring, grueling process. And sometimes it's just something that a lot of people don't want to take the time or just don't desire to even go through. However, I don't know the brother, but I'm just speaking of the mannerism in which you stated to me. Any man who does what you described to me, you see, he already punctified. You see what I'm saying? I'm just telling you like it is. He's a punk. Because you can't have any demands. You can't set a standard for somebody else that you yourself cannot reach.
Come on.
So how are you going to hold somebody to a contract or to a standard that you yourself cannot reach? You are a hypocrite. Number one, if you a man who has the audacity to call yourself a father, I don't care if you are a stepfather or a godfather, if you call yourself a father and you're not doing anything to further that child, then you are not that. So if you're not going to be that, then bow out gracefully, but by all means, how dare you? How dare you make demands on a standard that you yourself cannot reach? So as grueling as the process is, and I'm not one to do a tit for tat, and I know it's damaging for children not to see their parents, and of course I'm not condoning that. However, in this case, if he gonna be such a punk to run to the court every time he don't get his way, then she need to be running to the court every time he don't pay. Now. Bad exchange ain't robbery, okay?
That's right.
I'm telling you. Bad exchange is not robbery. Okay, we down to like the last half hour, and I want to ask Brother Walter, and I don't know what happened to Brother Mikhail. I thought he was still there. But in your opinion, Brother Walter, what can fathers do to better the process of going to court for child support, if it's just a must? From your experience, how should they present themselves and present their case? Because this is what I want to know, and I know sister's going to be mad at me, but I love y'all. But I'm not the nicest sister in the world, but one thing you can always say about me, I'm very fair. I'm very, very fair. You know, why not have joint custody? That way nobody got to pay child support. That's always an option. You know, now I know there are certain rules and regulations. It's different when, you know, the two parents live in a different state, because you can't ship the child off and have the child change in schools every 6 months. But I know that there was a certain mile radius in the same city that the parents could live in and the child could still access the same school. But that way the parent, both parents have equal access to the child. They have joint custody. If he's financially responsible for the child for 6 months of the year and she is, you know, responsible for the child 6 months of the year, then nobody has to pay child support. So I'm asking you, Brother Walter, in your opinion, how should a brother present himself or present his case in court, number one, when it comes to custody, and number two, when it comes to negotiating the amount of money that you pay? Because sometimes, like I know in Texas, I can't speak for any other state, it's like 25%. Well, that 25% does not include inflation. and everything has excelled. I mean, rent prices, utility prices, gas prices, food prices, everything has excelled. And I know that that is a factor of the parent who is also taking care of the child. So, in your opinion, Brother Walter, you know, how should a brother present himself? How can he make his case better?
Well, I think it goes into a few different variables. It's basically based on, from my experience, how the other or the custodial parent is coming in a legal sense. If it's a what you call a pro se case, and I'm not a lawyer by no means, but I'm just going off of, you know, some of the experiences that I've had. If it's a pro se case, which means you basically are representing yourself and other parties representing themselves, you know, you have a little bit different stipulations, and a lot of times, you know, it's a little bit more, I'd say it's easy to navigate through because you don't have property settlement and things of that nature. But when you are married and maybe there's property involved and, you know, other variables where maybe somebody was in business with each other, you know, it becomes a lot more complicated. So, you know, I would definitely say in that type of situation, get a lawyer and a good one because, you know, a lot of times there's a lot of things that we don't know about in the courts. Isn't going to instruct you on what you can take advantage of and what's available to you. Or, you know, if you can't afford an attorney, then maybe try to find some type of child support or child advocacy group as far as, you know, making you aware of certain things that are available to you because they do have some in different states. But if you have to go pro se on your own, you know, it's like Brother Corinne said, get a fair language. I mean, get a thorough knowledge of the language and how to go in there and present yourself. Don't go in there like, yo, what's up, and you know what I mean, and I'm just saying, and you know what I mean, Don't go in there like that because you'll get dealt with very unjustly, very quickly. But if you go in there and try to articulate yourself and not try to be over-intelligent and just basically try to, you know, do what you can and be honest about your situation. And like you say, you're trying to negotiate for the best interests of yourself. Then I think sometimes depending on who shows up to do their job that day, and that's you know, being in court sometimes like a crapshoot. You know, it's about who showed up that day to do their job and how they felt that morning before they had that first sip of coffee or afterwards. So, you know, that's the best I could tell you is do your best and try to, you know, articulate. Don't try to make it personal and, you know, see where the chips may fall.
Hmm. Okay. And Brother Kareem.
Yes, ma'am. if you would, please, I had to get involved in responding to something else that came up, but if you would just reiterate the question.
I wanted to know how can we better present ourselves in court to, you know, to find ourselves to be more favorable when we present our cases. I'm saying black men, I'm not saying we, but black men in particular, when we pursuing, you know, number one, custody, and number two, when we are trying to negotiate the amount of child support that is being, you know, required of us.
Yes, ma'am. Well, again, I'm in agreement with Brother Walter on that. Is number one, the fact is, you know, if I mean, I myself was, I mean, I'll just share my experience, and it didn't have anything to do with child support. However, I find it very effective anytime you have to go into the courts. Okay, and the bottom line is that every city has some type of law library. Okay. And whatever it is that you're going to court for, particularly in this case we're talking about child support and that type of situation, you go and you familiarize yourself with the laws in general, but more specifically you familiarize yourself with the laws that pertain to your particular situation. That's the bottom line. The other thing is that, like, and I agree with your brother, if it has come down to a situation where you've got to go to court, yes, you want to obtain the services, and if there is such a thing, of an honest attorney. You want to avail yourself of that individual because this is what they do. This is what they do. They practice, quote-unquote, the law, so they're going to be familiar with the statutes, the language, and things of that nature. However, you yet should go and familiarize yourself with it so that you can know if this individual is indeed representing your interests correctly. Also, when you go, you want to be intelligent. You want to be dressed properly. As the brother said, you don't want to go in. I mean, I really don't like the term, but I'm going to just use it. You know, you don't want to go in ghetto, quote unquote, because this is a serious situation. And if you really are concerned about the well-being of your child, you want to be represented and represent yourself and the child in the interest of the child in the best manner, you know. And like I said, I can't reiterate enough the fact that we have to know the language that we're dealing in. Just a very small, small example. For example, if you notice, if they're going to arrest you for a crime, one of the first things they have to do is they have to, quote unquote, Mirandize you. If you notice, though, when you go into the court, they will ask you if you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God, you'll say, I do. Okay, just those two phrases, all right. Number one, if you notice, after they come with a judgment concerning you, and even in child support cases, they come at you with a judgment, or they say, well, this is what we're going to order, so on and so forth, then the next question they'll ask you, as the person that's being sued, because that's what's happening, you're being sued for support, even though you're there voluntarily. They ask you, do you understand? They don't ask you, do you agree? They ask you, do you understand? And in legal terms, they have to ask you, do you understand, meaning, do you support this decision? If you, don't get me wrong, now you're going to have some testicular fortitude, okay, because they're going to come at you all kind of ways. If you never make the statement, I understand, then that means you don't support. If they say, do you understand, and you say, no, I don't understand. Not that you don't understand the words they said. Not that you don't comprehend, I'll use that term, not that you don't comprehend what they're saying. But what you're saying, when you're in court and you say you understand, you're saying, I support that.
Mm-hmm.
So now you just entered into that legal contract. If it's not fair to you, no, you don't understand. I'm just saying, those are just little things. But like I said, that's why it's so important to have an honest attorney. When it comes down to this point, you got to have an honest attorney, somebody to represent you, and you must understand yourself. You must comprehend the language that's being used. Because at the end of the day, they really can't do anything to you that you don't allow them to. That's the one thing they don't let people comprehend or understand. You know, because you got to agree to it, and based upon how you use the language and they use the language, is how we enter into these contracts. So, like I said, that's what we've got to do. You know, the biggest thing is stay out of these situations in the first place. Find out who you're fooling with.
I want to talk to the people on a universal level, but, you know, that is the reason why Master Farah Muhammad and Honorable Elijah Muhammad set the protocol and the restrictive laws the way that they are to prevent such things from happening, like having babies out of wedlock.
Right.
It is always our prayer that when we get married, it's to stay married, even though that has not always been the case. That certainly should always be the intention, and that when things get so hectic that we, in our own personal rationale, cannot resolve them, then we would, you know, use the scripture as a mediation tool,
right,
to help us through those difficult times. Excuse me, but sometimes we're just not evenly yoked, and, you know, yes, sometimes divorce is inevitable, but still, in that, we have to deal with one another in a positive manner. The scripture says that we are to argue in the best of manner.
That's right.
And so we have to present ourselves in a civilized state of mind, regardless of what the situation is. And we have to first, you know, I know it's a Hippocratic oath, but we have to first do no harm. You know, it's not our intention to do harm to a person that's about to be our former spouse, and certainly not the intention to do harm to our own children. And that's why it's so important that we don't make hasty decisions based on emotion, because sometimes we make the wrong decision. That's why it's not good to harbor bitterness, because out of that bitterness can be a decision made that affects someone for the rest of their lives. And at the end of the day, I don't have to say this, people already know, your children are the ones that are hurt. But I want to, you know, share this. I want to kind of give some solutions, but because I don't like to do a topic and just leave questions, you know, are not offer any kind of solutions. And 26 years of being a marriage counselor, I just want to, you know, suggest a few things, excuse me, to people in this process. Excuse me. If it is inevitable that you get a divorce, excuse me, the first thing I would like to say is that, you know, before you make that final decision that it's over, that you exhaust all means to saving the marriage. Mm-hmm. You know, is it something that you really, really just can't forgive? Excuse me. Everybody has their line that should not be crossed. Hopefully we're not doing anything maliciously and intentionally and trying to be slick and, you know, have infidelity and all these other things that take place in a marriage. Hopefully that's not the case. But always try to best to resolve your issue. And if you cannot, and I know it's hard because sometimes we don't want people in our business. We don't need to be running to our girlfriends and our homeboys. Get someone who has some experience. Sit down with an older couple. Utilize your elders. All of that wisdom is just going away. It's going to waste. Our elders are here for a purpose. Our elders have survived for a purpose. In a village, when they say it takes a village to raise a child, know that to an elder, we are still children. So even though I'm well in my 40s, almost in my 50s, my 70, 80, 90 plus year old brothers and sisters are my elders. And if I can grasp from their wisdom some information that can make my life better, then it's my duty to utilize my elders, because it gives them a purpose for living. And so in that process, you will see the circle of life and how important it is to include everybody. And even in child support, this is another suggestion I wanted to make. For those of you who are already caught up in the court system, you know, I know that's unfortunate, and maybe there can be some withdrawals. If you would just use a trusted family member, sometimes you can get one family member from each side. Maybe you can get the grandmother from that side, from the father's side, a grandmother from the mother's side, and say, okay, you know, we're going to be the mediators for you. Let's sit down and negotiate what is feasible to do. It is not feasible for you to try to get blood out of a turnip, and this is for either way, whether the father is seeking child support or the mother. If you got a person who's making $2,000 a month in this time, in this society, and you want $700 a month, you know you're being unreasonable. So let's try to live within our means. Let's not try to get rich off of child support. It's only going to last temporarily. You know, let's use the money as best, you know, fit for our child. Let's not use the money to get our hair done and buy Louis Vuittons. And I'm just going to tell the truth. You know that's what's going on sometimes. Not with everybody, but sometimes, you know, we're going to tell the truth. And let's do what's best for our children with those monies. And let's live within our means. But utilize the elders if you can. If you cannot, come up with an agreement amongst yourselves. And if you have no elders to access, there's, excuse me. I'm sorry. Brother Walter can tell you, I got caught in a rainstorm tonight and I almost didn't make it home, but I did. But I also wanted to reiterate that we can use faith-based counseling as a means of negotiation. And another thing you can do is sign a private contractual agreement. Excuse me. You can sign a private contractual agreement in front of your elders, in front of your faith-based counsel, and say, okay, I swear to this agreement, whatever, I'm going to pay, you know, $200 every 2 weeks or every payday or deposit it straight into the account, whatever the agreement is. You can do that. And you can avoid court costs and court time and, you know, possibly dragging your children into a situation. This is just some solutions that I want to suggest. And the other thing is that I want to give the realization about family court, because what we didn't really talk on is the purpose of family court. Now, I'm going to briefly give you some history. Briefly, if I can, without coughing. When Roosevelt, I think it was, created the New Deal, and there was welfare subsidies handed out to poor families, those poor families received, you know, supplemental income or whatever it is, and it included the mother, the father, and the children based on what means that they had. At some point throughout time, and I don't have the whole history with me, they started to extract the father out of that equation. Now, know that legislation in the court system followed the process of the New Deal. So the whole plan has been and continues to be to extract the black male out of the household and to keep the black woman bitter towards the black male. Because you think about it, if your man is struggling already, even though they say finances is the number one cause of divorce among black people, if your man is struggling financially, then why in the hell would you take him to court to pay an astronomical fee of child support when he couldn't even pay the bills when he was there with you? The opposite of sense is nonsense.
Come on.
And so what happens is that it keeps the black woman bitter with the black man. It's a game, y'all. It's straight up game. Another thing that it does, and Brother Walter and I touched on it a little bit, when they start to put restrictions on things like your driver's license and like your car registration, well, what does that do? It gives you a ticket. In some states, depending on what their law is, you can get arrested. What does that do? Does that not create a criminal record for the black man so that the next time he step off the curb before the light turn green, he gets another ticket? This creates another X on his back, and then he's not capable of going to work, so therefore he's not capable of paying child support. Then therefore he's arrested for non-payment of child support. It's a game. It's a game, and we have to realize what this system is doing and has done to black families. So the solution to that is to keep our black families together, sit down, negotiate, talk, work it out, because if he's locked up, you're not going to get a dime. And if you are assisting in this process of making him establish a criminal record, when he gets out, he's not going to find a job. You got people who ain't never even got a parking ticket, can't get a job today. So why make a criminal out of a black man who can try to do his best? But if you put that X on his back, they are Xing him out of the system. So those are just some suggestions that, you know, I wanted to offer. And we have to first be brothers and sisters above all else. Let's have that love. Let's have that respect. Let's learn how to rise above emotion. Let's do what's best for our children. Our children are at risk, and they are at risk for a reason. They're at risk because we are so caught up in our own selves, that we as women in particularly, excuse me, and I'm going to say this, and I hope my sisters don't get mad at me, excuse me, but we have forgot that the black man is the backbone of our nation, period. He always has been, he always will be. But it's up to us to keep that front and center. And that's all I'm going to say. So I'm going to leave some closing remarks from Brother Walton and then Brother Kareem. Brother Walton, you got anything you want to say in closing?
I just wanted to say thank you, thank you, thank you, and to all of the listeners and to Brother Kareem, and you know, all of us who are in these situations, you know, let's do our best to try to be patient with ourselves, be patient with one another, be more mindful of working things out, being more prayerful of trying to understand and to try to keep the focus on our children and less making it personable about ourselves. And, you know, it's never an easy thing, family. You know, we are broken people who are striving to get healing in many cases, but I think that when we really try to, you know, go off of, like what you said, Sister Gidget, our faith-based counseling and things of that nature, and stop leaning more towards our own emotions and passions and feelings, you know, we can really do ourselves and our community a better service and try to really think about bringing about a whole, because one of the things that's key to me is always thinking of, whenever we're talking about raising children, and we could talk about child support and courts and all of that all day, but the key thing is the children, what we do in our behavior and our treatment to one another is the blueprint of what they pattern later on in life. And as we become older and become elders, you know, when we start to see the same things exhibited that we went through, we'll come to understand that we contributed to that. So, you know, that's pretty much what I wanted to say. And I thank everybody.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Brother Walter, for such an intriguing topic. And Brother Kareem?
Yes, ma'am. Well, again, I also want to thank you, Queen Aziza, you, Brother Walter, Brother Mikhail, the entire listening audience, you know, for once again us coming together and dealing with this most vital subject. I mean, as far as closing remarks, I mean, you were right on point.
we have to return to the foundation. And the foundation is regardless of, like you said, faith-based. In other words, whatever your faith is, if I say I believe in God, then that's where I should go first to resolve any issue that I have. We have to have genuine love of self. And we can alleviate, I'm going to say 90% of these situations because they can be resolved. The other thing I would say is besides listening, the suggestions that you gave, individuals need to take those to heart. And even if they're not in that situation, if they know someone that's in that situation or going into it, share the things that you have gotten here because without practical application of these things, we are yet going to fail, you know. And that's really all I have to say about that. I'm looking for the lineup.
Yes, sir. Okay, and I just got a message that the phone lines for the show are down. So those of you who may be listening online, there's a problem with the chat room. I can't see all of you. If you can go back and revisit the link. And so I think the phone lines were down. So hopefully people can go back and just click on the link. In about 15 minutes, it will be available for listening thereafter. So again, I want to thank my distinguished panelists, Brother Walter W. Muhammad. Please give Sister Cinquella the greetings for me, and my dear brother Kareem Ian Muhammad from St. Louis, Missouri. Thank you, dear brother, for having my back. And Brother Mikhail, he tried to call in, and the phone lines are compromised or something. So thank you, Brother Mikhail, for being the co-founder of this topic. And thank all of you for your inbox messages and comments. And just thank y'all for y'all love and support. And join us tomorrow for live study group. We'll be discussing the time and what must be done, part 17. And we will also be discussing how to properly defend the teachings of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad and how to properly defend the work of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. So join us tomorrow for that here, 8 p.m. Central. And on Saturday, join us for Young, Gifted, and Black, where the Nation of Islam hip-hop artists get together and share their artistry. And on Sunday, join us for No Romance Without Finance, hosted by Brother Vernon out of Columbia, Maryland. On Monday, we'll be back here at 8 p.m. Central with Brother Kareem on Conscious Black Nation. And on Tuesday, finally, live and in living color, Brother Jahar, all praise is due to Allah, is back live with us after surgery. He's been gone for 3 weeks, but he's going to be live and in living color on Tuesday night at 8 p.m. On Wednesday, join DJ Black Caesar and Friends Show, our hip-hop comedy show. And on Thursday next week, I'll be right back here at you. Don't know what I'm going to be talking about, but you know I'm going to be running my mouth about something. So thank you all for listening. May Allah continue to bless you. I leave you as I came before you. As-salamu alaykum. One nation, one love. Good night, y'all.
Wa alaykum salam.
Hey, come on, man.
Thank you.